flimsy sheet of telex printout clutched in his hand. The president turned back to Missy LeHand, his secretary, pointing out where he had just crossed out a line for the address he was preparing for the nation, now scheduled for noon tomorrow before a joint session of Congress.
"Here, put this in the first sentence,"
and he pointed to his margin notes.
"A day which will live in infamy."
She nodded in agreement. He now focused his attention on his Army Chief of Staff.
"What do you have for us?"
"This just came in, Mr. President."
And Marshall stepped into the room, unfolding the telex sheet and handing it to him.
"It reports that a third strike wave of at least 70 Japanese aircraft is attacking Pearl Harbor. The line went dead approximately 10 minutes ago."
The president scanned the few brief lines.
"Oil tank farm struck, fires out of control, harbor channel blocked, preparing to face invasion."
The message stopped in mid-sentence. The president crumpled the report up, ready to angrily toss it on the floor by the side of his wheelchair, but then thought again. It was a document now, a moment of history, and he instead tossed it onto his desk to be filed away for later. Attack the United States, would they? On our own soil, without a declaration of war? He thought about this dastardly sneak attack. What could this ever be compared to? Even when the British attacked and burned Washington and this very building to the ground, we knew we'd survive. Could this onslaught be but the beginning? Hitler was at the gates of Moscow. Might the Japanese turn on the Soviets as well? Together, those two dark powers finish off Stalin and then fling their entire fury at England and then us as well. It was sobering to be the president presiding over the crisis of Western civilization and its death struggle with the forces of modern evil in both Europe and Asia. Our civilization must not lose this war, or it would be, indeed, as Winston Churchill said, 1,000 years of darkness. No, never think about the possibility of defeat, he thought to himself. If I allow that thought ever to take hold, it could permeate down across the entire nation. If ever America, if ever the entire free world, needed leadership that showed not just righteous anger, but also a firm, calm resolve that inevitable victory would come, it was now. Being an optimist was a trait he had acquired at Warm Springs, Georgia, when everyone else thought he should relax and accept that polio had crippled him and ended his political life. If he had given in 18 years earlier, he would not be in the White House looking at General Marshall and dictating his most important speech to Congress. No, he thought to himself, these Japanese will not turn me to thoughts of defeat, and neither will Herr Hitler. They have given us the possibility of bringing to bear the full force of our great people and the full resources of our great nation, and now, after 3 years of quiet, sustained effort, our preparedness program will show its results. That strength had to be aroused through words. Words often meant more than ships and planes and tanks. It was words that aroused a people and focused a nation. He thought of his good friend across the Atlantic with fondness for his inspiring courage and language. Though some of the more effete and cynical still privately shook their heads about Winston Churchill's posturing and rhetoric, there would never be a denial that the strength of his words and his pugnacious defiance were worth as much as an entire army in the field and had braced England in the darkest days of its long history. I must do the same. I must be the war president. I must lead. If I show weakness now, even for a moment, then surely darkness will triumph. In fact, I must become the president of inevitable victory transcending the war. He stirred from his thoughts and looked back at Marshall, who stood silent by the doorway into his office.
"Anything else?"
the president asked, fixing Marshall with his gaze.
"Not much, sir. Most cable links to Hawaii are down. Apparently the terminus on Oahu was damaged. Our Army radio monitoring at the Presidio in San Francisco reports that it can still pick up a civilian station that is frantically calling for volunteers to donate blood, and for anyone with medical training to report to the nearest military base. World War I veterans with combat experience are to report, too. The Lightning Division and National Guard units are mobilizing and preparing to repel any landing attempts,